Welcome to Let's Get Our Ship Together, a queer women of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Amira.
And I'm Aphrodite.
And in this episode, we are going to be debriefing the mid-season finales of Black Lightning and Charmed. And we've been building up to these for a while now. Aphrodite,
mm-hmm.
How do you feel?
I feel exasperated.
Good word.
I feel thirsty for more.
Yes.
I feel all kinds of frustrated. And I feel nervous. About the rest of the season for both of these shows, but in different ways. So
I feel like I'm agreeing with you, and I know exactly what you're thinking too, because I'm thinking the same thing.
I like the first word that comes to mind, at least with respect to Black Lightning, is salty. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know, I started out the season very enthusiastic and very excited about where they were going to take things with Thunder Grace. And we got, and at the very beginning, we got a ton of Anissa's queerness.
Yes.
Right off the bat.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what happened, but it just died. And I'm just, oh my God, I just want to pull my hair out a little bit. But yeah. I also feel like, I guess part of me feels bitter about what I felt like we were promised and what I think we didn't get.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It felt like we were baited a bit.
Yes, that's the word, baited. I'm very careful not to throw that word around because, like, when queers get baited, it can be, like, a very traumatic experience.
Yeah, it's a loaded term, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's not one that we take lightly. And usually I use that term to mean that, you know, we were baited into believing there would be queer content at all, and there was none. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it applies in this situation because they definitely use that kind of advertising to pull in a queer audience and then didn't deliver on those promises. Or maybe they thought they did deliver. You know, maybe they were like, hey, we reached our quota of gay content and we're just going to call it a day.
But you brought this up last week too. You brought up the unequal representation. Mm-hmm. So what was disappointing about this, the mid-season finale for Black Lightning is not just the fact that they continue to introduce new characters and new twists and new villains when they hadn't resolved previous issues.
Yep.
But what was really frustrating was just how much emphasis the Jennifer and Khalil relationship got and how much more those two characters got to develop and how little Anissa's relationship got to.
Yeah, so, Anissa at all. Anissa as a character didn't even get to develop as much as Jennifer and Khalil did individually and together.
I'm like, is Khalil a member of the Pierce family? Because he's getting a whole lot of screen time for not being a member of the immediate family.
Yeah, no, he is. I mean, Jennifer's getting this whole love plot intertwined in the main story. And Anissa's getting nothing, obviously.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because, you know, like I did say last time, I feel like it's unnecessary. I mean, we could be getting this plot about Khalil and his character development, but not have it be a romantic plot line, or have a romantic plot line and not be, you know what I mean? Like the fact that they're so heavily intertwined, it forces that love interest to be in the spotlight for the whole episode. And it's frustrating yet again, because I feel like we're getting a very subpar, it happens all the time, honestly, with hetero ships. Like I see it constantly. We're getting a really subpar relationship and we're supposed to be rooting for it. Like you can tell in the writing, and even in the way that their scenes are filmed, we're really supposed to be rooting for them as a couple. And I'm just not sold.
And it's not a question of, like, do we ship them or not? I think that's not the frustration. And I think people who have been – we've been supporters of the show. We've been, you know, Thunder Grace shippers. And we've been rooting for the show, wanting the show to really come through.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that, like, adds insult to injury – like salt in the wound, I will say, is this is one of my biggest television pet peeves, redundancy.
Mm, yes.
The mid-season finale did not give us any new information about the Pierce family.
Yep, yep.
It was a rehash of things we already knew. We already knew that Jennifer was coming into her own with her powers, despite her, like, her nervousness around it. Like, we already knew that. We already knew that Jefferson would, like, do almost anything and risk almost anything in order to find his daughter. right? Mm-hmm. Like, and we already knew that Lynn was falling apart. We already knew all of these things.
This episode ended at almost the exact same place that the last episode ended.
So they wasted an entire episode. And that's what frustrates me, because the new content they could have given us, that screen time could have been used to answer some goddamn questions.
Exactly.
Like, or it could have been used to like explore the characters we don't see enough of.
Some of the plot lines in this episode were just, I don't even want to say confusing. I mean, it was confusing to me, like why they were introduced at all. I mean, okay, Tobias has his eyes on like a new recruit. There was this like random boy that he's like, you know, trying to take under his wing. And it just like, it started, it went nowhere. I don't know what this is. It's really not much of a cliffhanger to me, because I just don't really care. I don't, you know what I mean? We don't know enough about it to care yet. And then Jen and Khalil running off, like even the way she was acting, I was like, how did it get to this point where she's like, oh yeah, this is my life now. And just like accepts it. She tells him, you know, she's a ride or die type of person. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, What about with your family? You're not ride or die for them? Like, I know she had some, like, animosity towards her parents for keeping her cooped up for so long. But, like, I mean, I don't know. I guess I thought she was better than this. I thought she was a little bit more mature.
Well, I don't think it's a question of maturity. It's a question of, like, is this actually loyal to the character? Because Jennifer is very risk averse.
Yes.
She is not Anissa. She's not Anissa. And so for her to just drop everything and, like, give it all up is just not consistent with everything else we know about her. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, this was suddenly a breaking point, a turning point, and now you're not afraid of anything.
Yeah, like you're just going to be on the run forever with this guy. Like, what? that's really what you want your life to be from now on? It didn't make any sense to me. And then, of course, that very last, like, introducing a new character right at the end.
Oh my god!
I mean, who is this guy? Like, what? Oh, he's going to Freeland. Okay, cool.
But we don't care.
We don't care. We don't know who he is. We don't know what's going on. Like, it's just not enough information. And then I thought that they would tie in something to do with like the Purdy and Sanjay people. You know, it was just like a 2 or 3 episode arc randomly in the mm-hmm. season that is apparently not going to be talked about again. I don't know. I mean, I feel like the writing was really all over the place this season. And I'm worried about this show's future, because I feel like if it doesn't get back on track, I mean, I don't know how viewership is right now, but I can't imagine it's like, you know, doing that well on CW in general.
Right. I mean, they're also moving to a new night.
Oh.
They're moving to Monday starting in January.
Okay.
So I don't know how that, you know, it's always risky whenever a show moves to a new night.
Mm-hmm.
I would be nervous. I mean, we should be worried about this show from a writing perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I like to believe that viewers are not that dumb. And, mm-hmm. you know, people will dump a show if the writing absolutely. Doesn't get itself together. And like, and I wish I had reason to believe that the writers were going to follow through on things. So, I mean, there are all sorts of things that are not being resolved or not being answered. Like, there's also a ton of trauma right now that's not really being addressed more meaningfully.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn feels responsible for the deaths of all these young people. And she's just lost her daughter. So she's like falling apart.
Yeah, Lynn
apart
is going
right
through
now.
Some shit right now. Like,
she's going through so much shit. And like, I'm really glad that Gambi like knocks some sense into Jefferson. Like,
oh,
Jefferson's about
I know.
To like fly up out there without his suit on. Just mm-hmm. like, oh my God. So there are all these terrible things that are happening in the family. And I'm just like trauma upon like just more and more trauma piled on top of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then to close with that scene where the new villain is basically a mass murderer.
And he took out everybody in that bar.
It's just a lot of violence without very much build up to that. Or like, I feel like violence is okay as long as it's earned. But this was clearly gratuitous.
Yeah.
And
I mean, they were just trying to like, you know, paint a picture of the character. And I feel like, yeah, like you said, it was almost like lazy writing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think the actors are doing a bad job with their material. I
no.
really think that, I also especially think that Nafisa Williams and like Chantel Tui feel a special responsibility with the characters that they're playing. And it's just a shame that they're not given like really good material to work with or sufficient material to work with. Like, how do we introduce all this conflict between Anissa and Grace? Like, and not resolve any of it. Grace is frustrated about Anissa's fuckboy tendencies. And we have no idea, is Anissa still being fuckboy? We don't know, but she did deliver a baby. Like, you know? So.
I know. It's like we only know what she's doing basically like as Thunder, but we don't know what Anissa is doing. And anytime we do see what Anissa is doing, it's just a way of like segueing into what Thunder is doing. I'm curious to see how viewership will look like when we come back from the break, because, you know, a lot of times people will lose interest in a show
over
the mid-season break because, you know, it's like they haven't been, they get out of practice of watching it basically. But the thing that gets them coming back is like a really good cliffhanger. It's like, oh, I have to find out what happens. So because we didn't get that great of a cliffhanger,
yeah,
I'm like genuinely curious to see if people actually end up, you know, coming back and watching the show. And it seems like the kind of show that has a pretty loyal fan base, but I don't know. I just, and I also question what standards the CW has for continuing. Really, it comes to, I know I've said this a million times, I'm really just worried that the show is going to get canceled. And I'm just trying to think of like, you know, how we would be able to tell if it's in that danger zone, you know?
So, I mean, the other reason to be a little bit concerned about Black Lightning is that the CW, because they have basically all these superhero shows and they're one night after the next, there's a lot of crossover episodes. So shows that are built into the crossover are really difficult to axe, right?
Like
Supergirl, The Flash, and Arrow. So all these shows where the characters are interacting across their universes with each other.
Yeah.
But Black Lightning is pretty self-contained.
Yeah, it hasn't had a crossover yet, so.
Yeah, so it's, the CW is using its superhero lineup as a way to, like, build up viewership across the different shows and to, you know. And so that's part of its current strategy. But Black Lightning, I don't know if that's part of the strategy. And part, and some of it is because Black Lightning is a very distinct show. It's like, it's a show by and for the Black community. You know, it's not written to cater to the masses, which is what all those other superhero shows, I think, try to do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, create a more, a, like, a very sympathetic, feel-good hero that we can all, like, root for. Whereas, like, this is a show about family dynamics. So that very much distinguishes it from the rest of the CW lineup. Yeah, and I don't know if that makes it more vulnerable or whether that's, you know, a unique contribution, value added to the network that they can't get elsewhere.
Wow.
It's a different audience. It's a different audience.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I feel like that's a good point, because now I'm not sure if the lack of crossover is just because like they haven't gotten there yet or because they have no intention of going there.
I think it's just structured, a show that's structured differently than any of the other superhero shows on the CW, because it's not one hero with, like, you know, sidekicks. It's a family. But okay, so we've talked about the ways we've been disappointed. I wish I had more positive things to say about the finale. I really do. Chantel Tui is supposed to appear later in season two, but what I've noticed is that when she is slated to appear, the scenes are so brief. I'm hoping that we find out what the hell is going on with her and her powers. I'm hoping that they return to that conflict. They never actually answered that. Grace brought that question up, are you going to hurt me again? And we don't have an answer to that. We also don't know what's going on. Like, why is Grace continuing to hang out with Anissa despite all of her fears? I'm still not sure if I am on board with Grace and Anissa the fuckboy dating. until we have evidence, I need something shown on the screen that demonstrates that Anissa has gotten her act together, or something to explain why Grace has suddenly, you know, lost her resolve.
I just want the story between them to be built up more in general. I mean, if they're giving them more screen time and more time in the writing room, like, spent on their story, we would be getting those answers, no questions asked.
Yeah.
But right now we have, like, very barely developed character for Grace, especially. And really even for Anissa, I would argue, like, compared to the rest of her family. And we have no development of their relationship to each other, how it's progressed. We just get these little snippets. It's kind of like, you know, telling and not showing. I'm worried that it's just gonna, like, fizzle out because they're gonna decide that it's not worth their time to focus on that story. So I mean, you know, because they've given Grace these powers, so I feel like that has to go somewhere. But look at all the other questions they haven't answered on the show. I mean, you know, do they have to deliver on that at this point? I mean, who knows what they're going to end up doing.
I mean, if you just, if you talked to us only a few episodes ago, the episode where we were like screaming and like our episode was titled Thunder Grace in your face, all in your face. Like, we were really excited because suddenly we got a cliffhanger that involved Grace, and we thought, oh, well, Grace is now going to be more fully integrated into the show. But we haven't seen that for several episodes now. I feel like maybe they could have gone one, maybe two episodes without any, like, Thunder Grace content. But they went the rest of the mid-season. So I was trying to brainstorm after I watched this. I was like, why are we getting so much of this hetero ship and not our queer ship, right? Because it's not just the hetero versus like queer ship. They're not direct comparisons. And part of the reason why is because Khalil as a character is supposed to highlight the experiences of being a young Black man. And the struggle that comes with having all that expectation and having limited choices. And Khalil, you know, went down the path that he did because the world gave him fewer choices and circumstances gave him fewer choices. So he's like a kid who, you know, has a good heart, wound up in some awful circumstances, did some terrible things, and now is facing the consequences of it. And we also see scenes where his mother talks about what it's like to raise two Black sons. So, like, I'm trying to not be so upset, even though I really am, because our queer ship is not getting the visibility that this straight ship is. And I'm trying to, like, you know, recognize that the writers are trying to accomplish something with Khalil's character. And there is a limited amount of screen time you can, like, screen time is finite. You have to pick and choose. The issue for me is not that the hetero ship got developed, but that there were redundant scenes, even for the hetero ship, scenes that could have been allocated to our queer ship or to other characters.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah, no, it's exactly what you're saying. And actually, this is where I know this is a completely different story and fandom and everything. But for anybody who's a Harry Potter fan, you would know this struggle. When I watched the sixth Harry Potter movie, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, I was furious because they removed so many crucial scenes from the book. But what was worse, what was really, like, you know, rubbing salt in the wound, as we have been saying, is that they added scenes that were not in the book and not only did not further serve the plot, but they actually made it more confusing. And so I left the theater so upset and so frustrated because I was like, why would you spend all of that time and all of that money shooting these scenes that didn't exist in the book when you could have been adding the very integral and important scenes that were in the book? So for Black Lightning, of course, I mean, they're going, I guess, loosely based on the comics. You know, it's like you said, like they're adding these scenes that they're not really serving a purpose. They're not furthering the plot anymore. We've already gotten these scenes. Mm-hmm. They're just repeating them again. Mm-hmm. And instead, we could be getting some little hints of queer scenes. I mean, like, it doesn't take much to make us happy. Like, give us a minute long scene and we'll talk about it for an hour. Like,
yeah, but we're getting nothing. You saw us do that. You saw us do that.
Exactly.
Spend that, like, a bunch of time talking about a 1 minute scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, literally 1 minute. And yeah. And still they give us nothing. I mean, I find it hard to believe that, you know, just because they want to focus on this storyline of Khalil's life, you know, that doesn't mean that we can't get any other story. So, you know, like I said, the whole thing with the Purdy and Sanjay, I mean, that was kind of compelling. It was interesting, but it just didn't really go anywhere. And now that it's over, I'm like, honestly, they could have spent all that time developing Thunder Grace if they wanted to.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, anyway, my gosh. So, okay. Yeah. So for after the break, when we come back, what are you hoping to see? And what are you expecting to see?
You know what I hope? I honestly hope that they bring some queer people into the writing room. At this point, I am almost certain that, like, if there was a queer woman in the writing room, she would not let this happen. I'm almost certain that if there was a queer woman in the writing room, this would not happen. With
if it was only one, maybe.
Well, like, she's so outnumbered, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe she's writing these scenes and we're just never seeing them.
That's entirely possible. What if scenes are being filmed and they're just being cut? And so it's, you know, that's
they're never even being filmed. They're just being cut when the script is edited.
I need them to, like, make up for lost time and, like, give us a lot more development. I really want us to understand Grace as a character, like, and understand, like, her motivations, like, why is she even keeping this secret for so long? What are her powers exactly? Those are simple. They're very basic questions. Like, what are her powers? I want to know. Yeah. I want that question answered.
Yeah. I don't think that's too much to ask. I mean, that's definitely, like, to break it down simply, what I'm hoping to see is more Thunder Grace, and to find out what the hell is going on with Grace specifically with her powers, what I'm expecting to see is a whole lot of nothing, if I'm being totally honest. I feel like they're going to come back. They're not going to give us Thunder Grace for a while. They're going to give us a little snippet. We're going to get excited again, and then they're going to have another dry spell. Honestly, part of me just wants to keep my hopes low just so that I'm not crushed again. The other part of me is just being realistic. I mean, I don't think that storyline is a priority for these writers right now. And to be honest, I don't know what is a priority for the writers, because it seems to change every week.
Oh my God, so true. So true. Yeah, I think I have to keep my expectations lower too. And for me, you know, I just got really excited about there being like an Asian character mm-hmm. on the show. And so I put a lot of hope and like anticipation. I put a lot into this ship, like emotionally. And I got ahead of myself. I should have been like, no, Jamie, don't get too excited too soon. You'll hype it up, and then you'll be disappointed. I just have to temper my expectations. I think you're right that Thunder Grace will continue to be a plot. At best, we can hope for a plot B. Right now, it's a plot C or D.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. But if we could get like a solid plot B, that would still be a huge improvement.
That's really the most we can hope for at this point.
And I would like for them to be some acknowledgement about Nissa's fuckboy history. And what exactly she's doing to change that.
Not to sidetrack us too much, but part of me is also like, what exactly is her motivation for being a fuckboy? Because at first we thought it was just like her inflated confidence. She's like had this newfound swagger from being Thunder and all this stuff. But then I was like, you know, what if she was sort of internalizing her fears about having a relationship as a superhero and thinking like, you know, it's better for me to just have these like short, you know, one-off flings.
Oh my gosh. Oh my
instead gosh, of getting invested.
I love you so much for this, because like you scrape the bottom of the barrel. You like really give the writers way more credit than they deserve.
it's like I'm giving them a way out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're looking for a way.
I'm like, you can still redeem yourself. We could still maybe plausibly believe this.
it's sort of like you're like watching like somebody perform and you're like nodding your head the whole time and just like do this and you like smile bigger. It's like you're being a cheerleader because you're scoring them and you're their cheerleader. Like you want to pass them notes. Like here's how you can do well on the exam.
Right.
Like, you know,
I'm trying so hard. I really am rooting for them. I mean, as much as we complain about the show, I just want to make it clear. Like I am a fan of the show. And I want it to succeed. And that's why I criticize it, because I care.
Yes.
You know? So, yes. I mean, the day we stop talking about it is the day we stop caring.
Yeah. I mean, Dr. Hall was tweeting with me a little bit about this. Like, mm-hmm. this is a radical show. This is a show with, like, an almost entirely black cast. And it's a show that deals with issues that have not been dealt with before. So in many ways, the show is radical. The issue here is not the concept, but the execution. And, you know, I am also someone who I critique out of love. If mm-hmm. I did not care, I would not talk. But the more I'm talking, like, this is a sign of how much I care and how much I want the show to succeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And we know how harshly these kinds of shows and movies are critiqued. You know, like, when these kinds of things don't succeed, it's because, oh, well, it was made for a black audience. It's too niche. And that's why, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And it's not like, no, because they had bad writers. You know, we're letting plenty of shows featuring white protagonists with bad writing. We're letting them like continue trying to make new shows because of course it can't be that the cast was a problem, you know, but like whenever it's like a show that's targeted towards a specific audience, that's not white people, straight white people, then, you know, it's that minority identity that's blamed because they claim it's too niche and it's not relatable for the general public, blah, blah, blah. So mm-hmm. I really don't want them to try to use that as an excuse.
I know.
And you're not make another type of, you know, show like this. So
yeah, the stakes are really high for this show, mm-hmm. you know, like a family of black superheroes who are like mostly bulletproof, you know, that's amazing. So it's unfair that we have such high expectations for shows like this, because shows like this are always, you know, the first of their kind. Mm-hmm. And like the day where we get to critique without worrying about how it might get axed is the day that we have what will feel more like equal representation on screen.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, mm-hmm. That was good. All right. Well, let's segue over into Charmed. It's almost night and day between these two shows because I'm actually really, really into Charmed and I'm happy about it. I shouldn't say night and day. I still have some caveats or whatever about the show, but I'm so into it. I feel like the writing is really good. They left us on a really good cliffhanger, but before we really dive into it, I just want to say, I feel like every episode they've had a really good quote, quote of the episode. And it usually comes from one of the sisters, but in this episode, I really enjoyed when Harry said, "I'm sorry, hysteria. Is it quite necessary to use that anti-feminist term?"
I noticed that too.
I was like, Oh, Harry.
Oh my gosh. I have one little thing to say about this episode.
Yes. Only one little thing?
Well, not one little thing. It's not exactly related to the plot.
Okay.
But so this show is set in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And the way that they're talking about snow in December, it's as if it's only just arriving in December. And that is unrealistic.
Yeah.
That is unrealistic.
Aphrodite and I have both lived. I grew up in Michigan. Aphrodite lived there for a long, long time. Sadly, neither of us are there now. But we both know that it snows a lot earlier than December. Most of the time, they got their first snow. So snow's been on the ground.
It's so nice to have snow in December. I'm like, what? Yeah. Where have you been? Snow in December. If it first snows in December, that's just not believable.
We've had weird seasons before, but it's not. Yeah, it's nobody reacts like that if they've lived in Michigan. No. Usually it's like, oh shit, it's snowing,
Yeah, I know. You would be that excited about snow if it's early November and it's just fallen for the first time and it's pretty.
Right.
That's before all the cars drudge up all the snow and it turns mushy and gray and slush.
Yeah. Exactly.
No.
Yeah.
Nobody's that excited.
Thank
about snow
you for
in
making
December.
That point.
Anyway, now we can both speak from experience.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines is actually when Mel was like, "You have such a big heart. It's literally your power."
Yeah.
That was really cute.
Yeah.
So I liked this episode because it was festive, but without distracting away from the story. The context was, yes, this is a holiday themed episode. But actually, we're going to forward all the different arcs in some really meaningful ways.
I feel like is the proper way to do the holiday episode. You don't make it about the holiday because then you're just – with all the shows that you watch, you're basically just watching the same thing over and over. They advanced the plot well. They dropped some bombs on us and left us with a great cliffhanger that has me really mm-hmm. looking forward to the next episode. One of the big bombs they dropped on us was actually finding out that Macy's boss is Potato's mom.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know, Potato is what we call Maggie's love interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
because we feel like he is bland.
He's
a potato. Which really, now that I think about it, is kind of an insult to potatoes. But
I watched the mid-season finale with a friend of mine who actually likes those two together. And she was talking to me. She's like, "What's wrong with potatoes? Potatoes are great. Yeah. You can put butter in a potato. You get salt and pepper." So why don't we start with Mel?
Yeah.
Mel, at the end of last episode, she gets bonked upside the head. Mm-hmm. And then we find out, Fiona's still alive. But we didn't see Fiona in this episode.
Yeah.
And then she wakes up and then Jada's there. And this is her introduction to the Sarkana. I love that part where they're in the shadows and then all these women come forward to initiate her.
Yeah.
I really like that scene.
This is the sorority that I've been waiting for.
Oh my God. This is dyke ass shit.
Yeah.
All these lesbian witches coming forward and they all got the same ass tattoo. Matching tattoos. And they're all kind of dressed kind of witchly too. And,
yeah.
Dark reds and blacks mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. the dark eye makeup. Yeah, this makes sense. This makes sense for Mel. This is a natural step forward for her to become initiated into this coven full of lesbian witches. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I buy it.
Yeah.
And so, later on in the show, she's in the kitchen and Jada sort of suddenly appears. Mm-hmm. And she takes Mel's arm, sort of turns it over to look at the tattoo. And it's because Mel, I don't know that she actually intended for the crows to come, but
yeah, I don't
Mel,
think so.
The crows are loyal to the Sarkana and the crows do their bidding. Mm-hmm. And at one point when the girls are in danger and they're under attack by like the shapeshifter guy, the shapeshifter brother, and then the crows all of a sudden come swarming and attack him. I actually got chills during that scene because I was like,
that's a really good scene.
The Sarkana came through for her.
Yeah.
Came through for the girls. I'm like, wow, Sarkana are legit. So that was a really exciting time. And so when Mel goes into the kitchen and Jada just suddenly appears and is like, oh, so I saw that that you called the crows. And like, it was a very flirtatious exchange.
Oh, it was. It was. Yeah, I think that they're trying to build that up and I'm into it.
I'm into it too. Like, you know, she kind of slowly goes up there and always with the dark eye makeup and like, you know,
yeah.
It could be like, 10 o'clock in the morning and she is still, Jada is still in all black with.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love the revelation too about the crows because, you know, they show that flashback to when they went home and found their mother and the crows like flew out of the house. And, you know, of course they're thinking like, oh, what if the crows, you know, hurt their mom? And I was thinking, oh, what if the twist is that the crows came to help save their mom. But then Jada said that later. Said it to Mel, I was like, oh, what if she's lying? Like, I don't know. I don't know what to believe now. I'm just like,
oh my God.
They're keeping me on my toes.
I have chills. I have chills right now. Wow. You really knew that stuff. You knew it.
Yeah, because you always expect it to be a twist, right? Like they think something and then it turns out to be something else. But because Jada told her in that same episode, she's like, oh, yeah, like, the crows actually went to try to help save her, but they were too late or, you know, whatever she said about it. I was like, wait a minute. This is too soon to resolve. This could be the lie that they later find out is not true. But I don't know. I really don't know what to believe.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
I'm into the writing, though.
Do we have a ship name for them? Maleta? I don't know.
Gel?
Sorry.
I'm just – yeah, I don't know.
So
I guess Maleta would be the one that comes to mind.
I have to say, and it pains me to say this, I think Melko's just not happening.
I agree. I know. We've been slowly coming to terms with it. And I think
wasn't ready to let go.
I feel like it's time to just, the ship is lost at sea. It's not coming back.
Oh, no. I know. Well, you know how we started off this show? Like, you know, I was like, Gaijin invasion. These Asians on the show in these like interracial queer women of color ships, and then like Grace disappeared on Black Lightning, and then Nico disappeared on Charm. Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, like now what?
I know, it's like an epidemic of missing Gaijins, basically.
Well, I mean, it's not fair because it's like two. That's the end.
I know. It's so like, sad. They gave us so little and then took it away.
I know. You know, there's only two of them, but when you lose one of them, then that 50% are gone.
Yeah.
And then you lose both of them.
And now it's 100%. Yeah, I know. I mean, technically Grace isn't gone, but, you know, we're not getting a lot of her, so.
No.
But
she's all practically gone.
Yeah.
Although I'm really excited about Jada, and it seems like Jada and Mel have some chemistry, like, because they don't entirely, Mel doesn't entirely trust her, but Jada is also trying to win her over slowly, and like, you didn't need to show up to the kitchen, you didn't need to do that, you just did it to do it. So Jada's clearly interested in Mel, even though Mel is like highly skeptical. And so what's going to happen is Mel going to like slowly learn to trust her. Like at what point is Mel's guard going to come down? When will this flirtation like be mutual since it's mostly in the one direction? And Mel's just sort of like,
well. Yeah. And I feel like Mel is still a little bit guarded, you know, because she's still thinking about Nico, understandably. But I also feel like she's kind of like, what's this girl's game? You know what I mean? Like, is this like a real thing? Is she just like flirting for sport? Do I even want to get involved with this person? Like, she's supposed to be, you know, double Asian, the Sarkana. So that's going to make things a lot more complicated. But okay, can I just ask something? And this is like, I don't know. It's been on my mind.
Okay.
I would have thought that Mel is a top. And I feel like Jada is like for sure a top.
Oh,
so like,
my God!
I'm just saying, are they even compatible? Because I feel like if I were Mel, I'd be like, okay, that bitch is a top. So like, this is not going to happen. You know what I mean? Like,
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh my God. There's no need to apologize. This is actually an important question because in Melco, it was super clear that Mel was the top, right?
Right. Yeah. Unless, I mean, I could potentially believe that they were like both switches, but like.
No, I think, yeah, I can see that.
You know, possibly, you know, even like, you know, 70-30 kind of thing, but like.
Yeah.
But I just feel like Jada is like big top energy, right? Like she's got like strap energy. And
yeah.
I'm like, is Mel ready for that? Because I don't know. But, I mean, I know they have queer people in the writer's room, right? They do on Charmed, I thought. I'm like, somebody in the writer's room had to have thought of this, right? Like, straight people don't think about this. They're like, oh, two gays, whatever. You know, they'll hook up. But like,
no.
Gay people are like, no, dude, there are types. No. Like,
yes. Like, Jada is the type of top who only tops other tops.
Yeah.
Like, that's the type of top she is. She is such a, like, top with a capital T,
yeah,
that she will only top lowercase tops. You know, she is like on that page.
She tops like the soft tops, you know.
Yeah. And like, okay, so now we know that Mel is a soft top. Yeah. Like soft top slash.
Are we declaring
switch.
That though? Because I'm just saying, if this was another better show, we would see a scene in which they had this discussion. I mean, basically, I feel like we've only ever seen that kind of stuff on literally like on the L Word, you know, where it's like two tops trying to fuck. Like,
hold on, person of interest, Root and Shaw.
Okay,
two tops.
But they succeeded because clearly, okay, come on, Root is definitely a dominating bottom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, she's a bottom because she commanded you.
Yeah.
To be on top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So
who is the top? Is the bottom the top? It's very confusing.
It is. It is. It is confusing. But I feel like, yeah, no, you're right. You're right. They did pretty much show that on Person of Interest. But, well, they answered that question for us because I think all of us were wondering.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
But there was a struggle. There was a fight. We witnessed it
that
with
was
our
just,
own
that
eyes.
That was the foreplay for them, you know.
Oh, my God.
Sex always starts the fight. For those
I
two.
Mean, that's one of the things in Maleda's favor, right?
Right.
Because, like, they're clearly at odds with each other, mm-hmm. and that can create a lot of sexual tension. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely think we're going to continue seeing that, like, love interest develop in the next half of the season. I don't know how seriously the writers are going to take it and, you know, is it going to be, like, plot A, plot B, plot C and beyond, you know, who knows? But at this point, they are really working the slow burn, and it's so slow that that's why I'm a little bit, is this a real thing? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not really sure if it's actually a slow burn or if it's just nothing.
No, I think this is a slow burn.
Okay.
I'm a little bit, so like, when I said I was kind of frustrated, like, I mean, some of this is like maybe sexual frustration. I'm like, is Mel gonna get something? I feel for her. Like, she's like got this tension with this new person. And like, we barely got to see her be that affectionate with Nico mm-hmm, either. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of bummed that we're getting so much of the other sisters' romantic storylines.
I know. Yeah, they were both significant parts of, I mean, the whole season. And especially the finale. I feel like, actually, this is sort of one of the things I didn't like about this mid-season finale. And it's very much like Black Lightning, where the youngest sister, Maggie, who I feel like has a lot in common with Jen from Black Lightning, her love storyline was a central part of the plot of the mid-season finale. And mm-hmm. it just kind of it bothered me. But I do want to say I was right about what was going to happen with that storyline. Was I not? We have it on the record. That,
yes.
You know, she was going to find
you
out
it.
And then he was going to be like, oh, but I love you. And then like, you know, saves her from the brother. And then he literally just like fucking kidnaps her to force her
that
to listen to him.
Up.
I'm like,
that was fucked up.
Who the fuck do you think you are? This is a Charmed one. You stupid potato. God, I hate
yes.
him. I hate him so much. I'm upset because I thought it was going to last longer. Like the part where she's mad at him, and maybe it will, but I feel like they set it up so that she's going to like, we're going to come back from the break and, you know, all is forgiven and they're dating and whatever.
Okay. Before we move
on to our grievances. Yeah.
Before we move on to our grievances, I'm just doing a quick Google to see what ship names people have come up with for Mel and Jada.
Yes.
I've seen Melda. Mm. I've seen Jell.
Hey, that was mine.
Okay. I still like Maleda better than Melda.
Yeah,
Melda sounds like Zelda.
It does. Which, I mean, was my favorite aunt from Sabrina, but it's okay. I also think that Maleda just sounds like sounds better.
And then someone posted on Tumblr, the theoretical OT3 of Nico slash Mel slash Jada would be Jelko. And
okay, I'm sorry. Did you write that? Because I'm pretty sure you are like the most avid supporter of threesomes whenever it's even remotely possible.
I know. I think it's because on some level I really believe in thruples as like a thing. I'm like, yes, give us a thruple on TV.
I thought it was thruple. Like couple.
Thruple? You're right. Okay. Thruple.
Okay. I just pronounce it in my head. I don't think I've ever heard somebody say it.
I mean, so. I haven't had very many conversations with people about this. So I've only read about it. Okay, sorry.
I'm just calling you out like left and right.
I know. I'm like getting a little bit flushed right now.
I'm sorry.
I like the idea of like lesbian thruples. Like, why can't we make this happen? Why does every love triangle have to end with somebody like being left out?
It always bothered me that it was called a love triangle because I'm like, a triangle has three lines and these only have two. It's like an arrow. You know what I mean? Like one person is interested in two people. They're not all interested in each other. You know what I mean?
I feel like that would be a triangle. Good point. Yeah. Anyways, I just wanted to bring up potential ship name.
Okay.
So I feel like right now I would call myself a Jelko shipper because I'm still not ready to let go of Nico, but I do like Jada.
A Melko shipper.
A Jelko shipper. Like, I'm not ready to let go of Nico.
Oh, all three. I see.
Yeah,
okay.
But I do like Jada.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll accept that. And I think moving forward, I am happy with the ship name Maleta. We can just continue to use that on our show.
Unless the fandom reaches some kind of consensus.
Yeah, if we're starting to see the same, you know, hashtag everywhere, then we have to go with that. the fans will have spoken.
The writers have to be sensitive because they can't have Maleta happen too soon because Mel is still getting over Nico.
Yeah, we don't want it to be a rebound.
Like, and obviously if you're still recovering from their like breakup, you know, it's like too soon, like it's gonna hurt. Mel wouldn't be actually ready. I actually don't know if she'll at what point in the season she would be ready to like date again.
I'm hoping that for those reasons they're gonna give us a really nice slow burn.
Oh my god,
that just like builds up, you know. We see Mel getting over her trauma, she's ready to start again, and then there's Jada.
Oh my god. Okay, so the thing is, so this is the problem. Let's say the writers give us a slow burn with our queer ship, but like nothing slow about the het ships, and instead we're just getting way too much screen time for the het ships.
Yeah,
like,
I know. But, well, because I mean, it's unfair when you think about it. Like, Macy had her conflict and it was resolved before the mid-season finale. Maggie had her conflict, which was resolved in the same fucking episode that the conflict was presented in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, I mean, they kind of like got rid of Nico before any of us were like, well, before they thought we were super heavily invested. But I just feel like it's so unfair to have the other sisters have their first love interest look like, you know, it's like OTP, it's Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
But not for Mel. And I mean, I'm happy that she ends up with anyone, but it's really unfair to me that she's not going to end up with Nico, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide whether I would be more offended by a ship that was like that was ended too soon and we didn't get to see their potential, or a ship that was allowed to run its full course over season one, but then they move on to a new person. Because like once fans get attached to a ship, like they're very like reticent to latch onto a new one, right?
Yeah.
And like I remember the backlash when Willow on Buffy started dating Kennedy after you know, Tara was killed off.
Yeah.
And it was like, but we also want to see her being a queer woman.
Right,
you know,
Yeah,
we still want to see that. And, you know, people do move forward, even if fandoms don't. And if you think about a show like I guess another example with Buffy, like Angel left after the first season and had his own show.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can introduce a meaningful love interest who doesn't end up being the end game.
Yeah, yeah. And that's fine. But as long as, like you said, I mean, and I feel like with straight characters, it's not that bad because we're still getting a lot of straight representation on the show either way. You know what I mean? If this character is not showing a love interest, then another straight person is. But if you only have one queer character on the show and you're trying to show us queer representation and you go this many episodes without even a mention of Mel's queerness, then it's like, you know, I mean, are we even getting the representation that we've been promised? So, and because really the primary way to show her queerness is through a relationship, know, that's why we're asking for that. But I still feel like they could be showing her with her queer friends. They could be showing her being, you know, a queer activist. I mean, there are other ways they could be showing it that I feel like were hinted at in the beginning of the show that didn't really pop up again.
Yeah. So. Well, her leaving her PhD program definitely was a bummer because do you remember that list of like things lesbians like? Stuff lesbians like.
Oh, it was, yes.
You remember that, right?
Yeah, I do.
Stuff lesbians like, hashtag grad school. So there should be a ton of queer women in her women's studies department that are flirting with her. And we imagine a scenario where Mel would go on these like funny first dates with people or like she would even try make a clumsy attempt to like get back out there again.
Yeah.
So that would have been a cute way for them to like remind us that, hey, Mel is a queer woman.
Right. But I mean, even more realistically, like Mel, why doesn't Mel have any friends? You know what I mean? Like somebody who would like come and check on her, you know, when she's dropped out of this program or when she's like acting weird and suddenly has like a new sister added to the family. Like no one's paying attention to like really any of the sisters. And I feel like that's very unrealistic, especially for Mel, because we know how our communities work and she just seems way too lonely for the kind of person that she is. You know, she would have definitely made a lot of connections along the way in her life, and we're not seeing any of them.
To be fair, the only one main character on the show that we've seen have friends has been Maggie, and it's because she was in the sorority briefly.
Yeah, and they weren't really her friends. They were just the other
sorority members. None of the girls have friends. All of the girls have are romantic.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, all of them, it's really weird, but I feel like, you know, Macy is kind of like immersed in her studies. She really only knows people from work. That makes sense. Maggie tried and failed to join a sorority, so all that time spent building those bonds has gone to waste, and she didn't have other friends in the meantime. Plus, she's preoccupied with Potato, so she just spends all of her free time with him. And so I just feel like Mel is the one that I'm most surprised to see does not have any other friends outside of her family.
I interrupted you about with the ship names because we were originally talking about the head ships, but maybe we don't have to spend that much time talking about them.
No, we really don't. I mean, all I wanted to say is, you know, one, I was right about Potato and Maggie's storyline.
You called it.
I hate that I was right, but, you know, I did think it was going to take longer for that to happen. I didn't think it was all going to happen in one episode, but, you know, here we are.
I think it's because they're trying to paint him out to be a more sympathetic mainstay. Like, the way that they had him turn against his family by the end of the episode says to me that they want him to be, like, someone that we're rooting for.
Right, right. No, it's not his fault that he's half demon, but like, you know, that kind
of thing. The fact that he kidnapped her, like, I was, like, yelling. I was like, what the fuck?
He already did a lot of questionable things.
He did so many things to violate her boundaries to begin with. And then he had to go and kidnap her just to explain himself. I'm like, no.
Yeah, he should have given her time, and then if she decided, you know, she was ready, then he could have talked to her about it, but, you know, whatever. And then, you know, with Macy, to be honest, not much happened. I mean, Galvin came over to their house, apparently was not killed by, you know, because we saw him get hit by a car in the last episode, and I was like, oh my god, like, is he gonna be okay? And then it was like really anticlimactic. It was just like he shows up on crutches, like
as he showed up on his crutches and he was dangling the mistletoe.
Oh, I know.
I was covering my face. I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh my god, I can't. They're both so awkward.
I know. God, I'm like, do people think all scientists are like this? Because I guess I can't really deny it, but I was trying to think of us as examples, and I was like, no, we're pretty awkward.
No, we're pretty awkward, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like we're like, awkward, but, like, in a socially acceptable way.
Yeah, it's where it's, like, cute, you know? Like,
yeah, it's kind of, like, cute.
People find it endearing.
Yeah.
Which I guess, arguably, Galvin and Macy are like that, too. I mean, it's just, like, you know, when you're attractive, you can get away with a lot. So I think that's kind of what they have going for them at the moment. But yeah, nothing really happened with them in this episode in terms of, like, progressing their...
I mean, other than the fact that, like, Macy is, like, basically terrified of physical intimacy.
And... Yeah, but, I mean, we've seen that. It's just kind of, like, further emphasizing that.
Yeah, she's terrified. She, like, doesn't want to kiss him, doesn't want to snuggle up on him. And I'm like, when the shapeshifter turned into her and started cozying up, I'm like... Uh-oh.
I know.
You are giving yourself away. You are giving yourself away.
Yeah, so I don't know. What do you... So, okay. Of course, the very last scene we see, the sisters manage to send the shapeshifter brother into Tartarus and accidentally...
With Potato's help.
And accidentally also send Harry into Tartarus with him. Well, I mean, he, like, you know, the shapeshifter, like, grabbed his leg or whatever, but he was already slipping in. And they couldn't do anything about it because they had to get rid of the shapeshifter and it was too dangerous for them to try to pull him out. So... that's the cliffhanger we're left on. They've sent Harry to Tartarus. They need to try to save him. I don't even know where they're going to start with that, but that's definitely going to be a priority when we come back from the break for their storyline. We're also probably going to see, you know, Mel continuing with the Sarcana and having Jada as a love interest. And unfortunately, both Potato and Galvin are going to be involved. Yeah. It looks like.
So do you ship Macy with Galvin now?
I'm cautiously optimistic about it. I feel like he has his faults and I'm sort of blaming the writers for just thinking that that sort of behavior from a man is normal, because I feel like they genuinely don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, how he's behaving and he should be forgiven. But I'm like, you know, if somebody treated me like that, I'm not going back. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. But I feel like I'm choosing to let it go because I know that if I hold that grudge, it's just going to make me not really enjoy that much more of the show. And I think he is really trying now, and that when he is, you know, not being an asshole, he's actually like a really good guy. I think he's going to be a really good boyfriend. So Macy seems happy and I just want her to be happy, to be honest. So.
Yeah. Give her something to smile about. Yeah. Honestly. She's just like, she's so nervous all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with Galvin. He doesn't take up too much space. I'm upset about Potato because he takes up all the space as white men do.
Yeah.
And I hope we get more of Jada. I do want them to bring back Nico in some capacity, if just to give us some closure.
Exactly.
Her leaving the show was so abrupt, mm-hmm. and it all happened in one episode, that they really need to come back and address it. Like, we didn't get – it was so quick, the way that Nico was introduced and then, like, ripped out of the story. And I think that was unfair to shippers. Like, it should have been stretched out over maybe 3 episodes instead of crammed into 1 episode. Like, they still could have done it. But they could have, like, you know, demonstrated that Nico's life really was in danger. And that they had exhausted all other options. And then Mel made the decision. And it would be a really painful experience. But we would understand why she made the choice that she did.
Exactly.
Instead of having it seem so hasty.
Yeah. I feel like all of us were left like, well, there has to be another way. Like, are you sure? Are you absolutely positive? I just, like you said, I feel like they didn't show the process of exhausting every option. But, and you know, now that they've gotten rid of the shapeshifter, maybe they will try to bring her back. I just thought of that. Because that was the reason they tried to hide her away in the first place by, you know, alternating the timeline. So now that they believe that threat is gone, maybe Mel will, you know, try to investigate ways to bring her back. Or, you know, to...
That might be a bit of a stretch, but who knows?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm giving myself a glimmer of hope, and I really shouldn't.
I know, and I'm like trying to like shut that down, gently. Like,
sorry, I know.
Yeah, so this was an excellent mid-season finale because it gave us some intrigue, it answered some questions, it like resolved some problems, and you know the Potato thing happened sooner than we thought it would. So I think that's a good thing because I just want to get it over with. Mm-hmm. Like, let's get that over with, so we can move on to other more interesting storylines.
Yeah. And, I feel like it's not too much to ask for. We have a cast of 3 sisters, all women of color. Couldn't they all date people of color?
People of color,
I mean,
yes.
Harry's in the story and he has finally, he worked hard to make himself a likable white man, as he should. You know, he needed to earn that. You know, I've gotten to a point where I really like him as a character. I admit at the beginning, I was like, really? They have like this white guy who's their white lighter. But, you know, now I'm like, I really like him as a character. I really don't like that Maggie's love interest is this particular white boy. And I feel like, can you at least just have more people of color on the screen?
Yeah, like he's all so the time. Privileged.
Yeah,
he's just, so privileged. Ugh,
it's just like you look at him and I just want to like punch him. Like he just has one of those faces, you know?
Yeah.
I don't advocate violence, but.
One thing that did kind of get to me is like, you know, the one time we're shown like an Asian male in a romantic capacity, that is when Macy went on that date with that Asian guy. Mm-hmm. He turns out to be, you know,
that
a
cicada
creepy
monster.
like that bug thing. And I'm like, okay, I like when Asians are introduced onto shows, but I don't like when they're, maybe the word is disposable.
Yes.
And I feel like across the shows, like, I'm starting to get the sense that Asian characters are disposable.
Yeah.
I mean, Macy has already chosen Galvin as her love interest, right? But it would have been cool to see either of the straight sisters, like, also maybe explore. It would have been cool to see,
absolutely.
If that had actually turned out to be a real date and not, like, you know, like, that guy didn't turn out to be a cicada. So, like, I guess I get frustrated when Asian characters are treated as disposable. And, like, the limited screen time that we got with Grace on Black Lightning, combined with the removal of Nico, and then combined with, like, the sort of use of this Asian male love interest as, like, villain of the week. Type thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. All of that kind of, like, just, like, still doesn't sit completely well with me, even though I'm still really pleased with the writing on the show as a whole.
No, I don't blame you at all, especially because that last character, the Asian guy, it almost just seemed like an excuse to show off how woke the writers are. You know what I mean? They're, like, rattling off those stats about, like, Black women and Asian men on dating apps.
But then
they
made him a predator!
Did it have to be him? Like, couldn't he have been the good date? And then maybe Macy goes on another date. You know, I don't know. It was just, I thought maybe they were going to get there and find out that they were wrong, you know, wrongly accuse him of being a cicada and have it be sort of like another, like, summer incident, like, you know, Galvin's ex. So,
yeah,
you know, where it's just kind of like comedically like, oops, you're not a monster.
Yeah.
It was just really disappointing.
I also just thought of something else, which is that Maggie is dating a potato, but she's also the most light-skinned of the sisters. You know how, like, women of color, quote-unquote, date up when they try to date white men? And how, especially for light-skinned women of color, this is a way of, like, sort of climbing up that racial hierarchy.
Yeah.
Maggie as a character is not white.
Right.
The fact that she passes as white and she's also dating this white man, I don't know. It just, like, reminds me of that issue where light-skinned POCs assimilate or, like, quote-unquote, date up and date more privileged white people.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, this was a real-life person. I would definitely, you know, think about that analysis. But because this is, like, a show written by people who, you know, it's like, I don't know if they're thinking in those terms. If the issue isn't being addressed on screen and in the script, then I feel like it's safe to assume that the writers didn't think about that. I mean, it still doesn't make it any less true or valid. I mean, you know, it's like, this is something that we're seeing in real life and we're seeing it on screen as well. So it's one of those things that's maybe become so normalized in real life that they have no, it's just like second nature to write it into a script.
I mean, there are so many white men out there.
Yeah.
You just like, well, you might as well date them.
Oh, God.
Anyways, so super pleased with this episode. Something to be grateful for now that it's the holiday season and we should be grateful is that we have had something to talk about every week with respect to queer women of color ships this fall season.
Not every week. Remember, we did skip. We skipped 1 week because there was nothing.
Usually the other show had something. Like,
yes,
of the two shows, there was something happening on either show. But we did have a brief period where no queer women of color ship action was taking place on either show.
Overall, it was a little bit drier than I was hoping from these two shows, I have to say.
Yeah, okay.
I'll say it's not the worst I've seen, but it's not the best I've seen.
I think the best is yet to come for Charmed, and the worst may be coming for Black Lightning, but we'll see.
We will see.
Yeah. That wraps up our debrief of the first half of the seasons for Black Lightning Season 2 and Charmed the reboot. We may come back again and do a year-end review before the year's out or in the beginning of 2019, just because we did have a lot of things happen this year. Also, on that podcast, I want to gush about Hearts Beat Loud because it was an amazing movie.
Yes, it was. It was. I'm so glad you finally watched that.
Oh my God, Amir, you recommended it super highly and I took your recommendation and it was so worth it.
I'm glad. I'm still at 100% for recommendations for you.
You deliver. It was a fantastic film. And we can talk about that more on our next podcast.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
Thank you so much for tuning in 2018. We started this podcast in June and we're really lucky to have you as listeners and to have you continue to engage with us. Feel free to continue tweeting or messaging us if you have thoughts about the mid-season finales, opinions, critiques, if you disagree. So tweet at us at QWOC Ship and have a wonderful holiday.
Yay! Bye!